This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
News today, the companies have been doing some serious hiring in the last 3 months.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. American payrolls, as measured by the government, are up by 195,000. The number for June was much higher than the consensus of economists predicted. A parallel survey of households, however, kept the unemployment rate steady at 7.6%. Stocks started off the day up, with the S&P rising about 0.5% in early trading and the 10-year bond yield rising to 2.7%. Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial. Chris, a good morning it is.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Terrific job numbers in June. And what's even more impressive is a 70,000 combined upward revision in April and May, so that we've got 3 months in a row now within touching distance of 200,000 jobs.
Who's hiring?
All on the service side. The goods producing side, manufacturing, it looks just awful with actually job losses in all 3 months. Construction is weak, but you're seeing a lot of retail jobs, a lot of leisure and hospitality jobs, and then the old standby healthcare services is also growing.
These job reports require a critical eye. I'm still seeing a lot of folks who want to work longer hours still stuck doing part-time.
Yeah, that if there's anything to be disappointed about, that would be it. There's a measure of unemployment which includes people who are working part-time, want to work full-time, and that just jumped in June, suggesting it is part-time hires and not full-time.
I'm sure your readout also shows what mine does. 10-year Treasury yield at 2.7%. We're going to be paying a lot more for credit cards, mortgages, and car loans pretty soon.
That's right. And that's the market betting that the Federal Reserve is going to like these numbers enough to withdraw support for the economy.
Chris Lowe, I want to thank you for this. He's at FTN Financial. Appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, David.
Visitors are flooding taxpayer-owned land this holiday week, maybe for the hike into Grand Canyon National Park or maybe the crackle of fireworks last night over the National Mall in Washington. Despite federal budget cuts from sequestration, the National Park Service says attendance is up in the year so far, 2013. But Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports that does not mean those cuts are trivial.
It's nearly 5 o'clock on a muggy Philadelphia night outside the building that houses the Liberty Bell. A little too late for Daniel Ali and his family, who came down from New York to get in.
It is very disappointing. And then we press the button for the English, I guess the audio, and that's not even working.
Ali says it's not the end of the world, but annoying. Annoying is what National Park Service Director John Jarvis is hoping for.
We've minimized the impact. We did not want to pass this pain on to them.
The pain is a $150 million budget cut, 5% of the park budget. To close the hole, parks have reduced hours at places like the Liberty Bell, trimmed seasonal staff, and left full-time jobs unfilled, like a wildlife biologist in the Everglades who specializes in pythons.
We're at war with these large snakes, and you know they eat pretty much anything they can catch, and that has a deep concern for us in the long term.
With prospects for a budget compromise in Washington dim, Jarvis says their current belt tightening could continue. The park director says it's depressing. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
There's news this week that not only are Honda sales up, the company says it expects to become a net exporter of vehicles from the U.S. by late next year. In other words, Honda will send abroad more cars made here than it ships in. Let's look into this with Chris Farrell, Marketplace's senior economics contributor. Hey, Chris.
Hello, David.
So during this Independence Day week, you'd think we'd highlight a good old Made in the USA company, but what we have here is the Honda Motor Company, headquartered in the Minato Ward of Tokyo, Japan.
Well, hold on here now. 1982, Marysville, Ohio, Honda opened its first U.S. plant. And now a majority of the vehicles that Honda sells in the U.S. are made in the U.S. It will be a net exporter to the rest of the world. I mean, Honda, in many respects, is an American company. It's an American success story, David.
And you're not just talking about lower-skilled workers throwing together Honda parts made elsewhere. At least some of the R&D is here.
Oh, a lot of the R&D is here. A lot of design is here. We think about the American auto industry, like Ford. A Ford Focus, 40% of the content is U.S. or Canadian made. Toyota Corolla, classic Japanese company, 70% of the content is U.S. or Canadian made, because the way the government takes these figures, they don't make a difference between U.S. and Canada in terms of parts. So made in America, this is a global industry. It reflects that we are more competitive as a manufacturer. We have stable labor costs. The dollar is a competitive advantage. And therefore, Honda is, in many respects, an American company.
Now, members of the United Auto Workers Union might disagree with you here,
yes,
Chris, but you're thinking that ultimately this idea of opening up our borders to freer trade is a net winner when it comes to these cars?
It's absolutely a net winner. I mean, if you go back to the early 1980s, David, when the Marysville, Ohio plant was opened by Ohio, and we had these open borders. And what essentially the U.S. manufacturing industry did is it learned from the Japanese, and we adopted our labor relations to a lot of the Japanese model. The Japanese set up their plants here in the U.S. And so we have a global auto industry in the United States.
Marketplace's economics guy, Chris Farrell, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
And European officials are furious to learn from leaks that the U.S. was spying on them, supposed allies. But what can they do about it? Today, the European Parliament called for the scrapping of two post-September 11th agreements that give the U.S. access to European financial and travel data. The non-binding resolution passed overwhelmingly in Brussels today. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.